This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, your pop culture home.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at audibletrial.com/thekingsofsport. Audible.com has over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. To start your trial today, go to audibletrial.com/thekingsofsport.
Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the podcast that's changing the game one show at a time, with your hosts, Alfred Cottaway, Nate Milton, and Marcus Vanderberg. So sit back and relax, because you're now down with the Kings.
And welcome to the Kings of Sport, the podcast of changing the game one show at a time, a.k.a. the world's most dangerous sports show, a.k.a. iTunes' longest-running weekly episodic sports podcast produced by two or more African-Americans who are not affiliated with a major network. I am the Godfather, Nate Milton, joined as always by Big Nasty Alfred Cunningham and Marcus Vanderberg. What's going on, fellas?
What up?
What's up, Nate?
Not much. You haven't talked since Thanksgiving. Everybody have a good holiday.
Delicious.
I did. Thank you.
You had a bunch of yams, Alfred?
Oh, yeah. Too many yams. I'm still not tired of yams, if you'll believe it. So I know I love them. All those yams that I ate.
Let me ask you a yam question. So for okay. Thanksgiving and Christmas, are you a marshmallow guy or no?
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you.
Only when my mom makes them.
Okay.
I've had them. I think Boston Market puts marshmallows in the yam, and
not,
I didn't like
so
it. But
good.
When my mom makes those yams with the marshmallows, oh, nobody does it better.
Yeah, right. You got to have the yam. The marshmallows with the yams.
Yeah, the candy yams.
Yeah, got a nice little crust. Like when they get the little crust on them.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, I had a good Thanksgiving. I'm not. I would say I'm not looking forward to Christmas, but it's more so I'm not looking forward to how people act around Christmas.
What do you mean?
Especially, like, I work around the shopping center.
Oh.
Yeah. And the madness has already started.
Did you work last Friday?
Fortunately, I did not.
Oh, okay.
I was able to escape that because the truck that we get in on Fridays came in on Thursday. So I was able to avoid the Black Friday rush.
Really? So no tramplings or anything?
No, not for me. I don't do Black Friday anyway. Like, my sister and my mother do that to a certain extent. But I'm like, so when they came out with Cyber Monday, that was like the greatest thing ever for me.
Yeah, I'm with you. I tried Black Friday for the first time ever last year. And I just ended up waiting and waiting and waiting. And I didn't even get what I wanted to get. And I showed up at like 5 a.m. But that's even too late. For
I was going to say, that's even on Black Friday, you got CPT.
Yeah.
Oh, man. But yeah, we got a big show today. Lots of crazy things to talk about in the world of sports and entertainment. But before we get to all that, we're going to kick it off with a serious topic. And it's kind of been the topic of the day and the topic of the last month or so, if you want to be honest. And it's something that we haven't really talked about that much on this program because, you know, I wanted to kind of wait until everything kind of settled down and we could look at everything more objectively instead of, you know, making projections or making predictions on how this thing was going to turn out. But big news today out of Florida. Florida State quarterback and Heisman Trophy contender Jameis Winston will not face charges. And it's been something that people have been talking about, like I said, for the past month or so, and lots of varied opinions on one side or the other. But, bro, Marcus, for those that may have been living under a rock and didn't hear this story today, can you let them know what went down in Tallahassee?
Sure. So on December 7, 2012, an incident happened at an off-campus apartment where Jameis Winston was accused of sexually assaulting a fellow Florida State student. Jameis was a redshirt quarterback at the time, redshirt freshman. And the incident was reported and sort of fell under the cracks until this past November, 11 months later. And the case was reopened and the state of Florida examined the evidence. And as you mentioned earlier, they determined today that they do not have enough evidence to charge Jameis Winston in this whole incident. The details of what the woman reported came out today, and it sounds like she was intoxicated. She claims she had 5 or 6 shots, according to police documents, and the woman ended up in a nearby apartment, allegedly with Winston, and the two did engage in sex. I guess at one point a guy came into the room in order to try to break it up, and the sexual intercourse continued on later on in the bathroom. TMZ had a story as well that said one of the witnesses that was one of Jameis's friends said that he had walked in on Jameis and the alleged victim while she was performing fellatio on him. And not only was, she more than willing, according to this victim, but the woman saw the guy walk in and close the door in order to get more privacy. So it sounds like, regardless if he was proven to not, commit a crime, but there wasn't enough evidence. But either way, it's not really the behavior you want your 18-year-old, taking part in. This isn't a good look for Jameis, even though he's been cleared. It's something sort of like Roethlisberger and his incidents in the NFL that will hang over him. But hopefully it doesn't impact him in the Heisman voting. What do you guys think about that? Do you think this will work against him between a combination of this and sort of what happened with Manziel winning last year?
Absolutely not. I think this will just make it universal because this is a year where Jameis Winston is the only player who should be considered universally as a Heisman candidate. I was a little bit interested to see as to what would happen. As a person, it's good to see that Jameis isn't being taken down. And, I don't know what happened, but if Jameis would have been convicted, it would be very interesting to see where they go with this, because now Jameis has a black cloud over him, and you have all kinds of candidates from Johnny Manziel to Teddy Bridgewater. It's wide open, and I would have just been interesting to see where they go with this. But I think now you've seen Jameis Winston has already been announced as ACC Player of the Year. This will just give voters a green light to give Jameis Winston the Heisman and all kinds of accolades. You want to talk about consensual? It's going to be 100% consensual, I think, that Jameis Winston wins the Heisman. I think it's going to be the most universal win as far as critics and voters agreeing on one Heisman winner in history.
Whoa. I agree to a certain extent.
Oh, that no. It'll...
In history, I do believe that.
I agree that he'll win, but I think you're going to have a lot of dissenting votes in the sense of people trying to make a stand. We see this every year, even in Major League Baseball, when it comes to MVP voting or Cy Young voting, Hall of Fame voting. When people have an agenda and people want to make a statement, they will go against the grain, so to speak. But I mean, the numbers are there. He's almost thrown for 3,500 yards. He's got 35 touchdowns against only 8 interceptions. He's almost got a 70% completion rate. So, he's led this team that a lot of people thought would be a good team, but we didn't think they'd be national championship good. They've got the ACC championship coming up on Saturday against Duke, and they should get past that hurdle. And then, next stop, national championship. So I think that the charges being dropped help him in that sense. But I do think, like Marcus was saying, it's a wake-up call for Jameis, in the sense that, you're a star. You have the whole world ahead of you. You've got an NFL career ahead of you. You've got a bright future. And regardless of whether this was a crime or it wasn't a crime, or if it was consensual or non-consensual, or it was consensual to a point and then it became non-consensual, we'll never know the details of exactly what happened that night. But it does – kind of raise some flags for Jameis in his own mind, hopefully, that, hey, I can't afford to put myself in situations like these because you never know what could happen.
In terms of the Alford's comment about being a runaway runner, I think he's going to win the Heisman, but we already saw last week, Christine Brennan of USA Today wrote a story with a headline that said Heisman could use a winner like A.J. McCarron. This was before the Alabama loss, but the point the point she was trying to make was Jameis Winston has this black cloud over him, So why not vote for the guy who's this outstanding, like sort of the Tim Tebow thing, where why not vote for the guy who's the outstanding citizen who can do no wrong? You know, I think that will temper a bit now that he's been cleared, but I still think there are people, Paul Feinbaum of ESPN at, you know, has said that he likely won't vote for Jameis Winston. This is before today's decision. So there's enough people out there that were leery of what happened that will, you know, I think he'll still win just because, you know, McCarron lost, Alabama lost. So that was sort of, I think, you know, second in the clubhouse. But did you guys see the press conference with the state attorney?
Yes.
I did, with all the laughter.
Yeah. What did you guys take from that? Because I just thought it was just really insensitive to the victim or to the woman who accused Jameis of this crime. And it just seemed like, you know, looking at this whole thing, it's pretty remarkable that you're looking at a black man in the South who did this to a white woman, allegedly, and only in sports would a community embrace the black man in this situation like they have and sort of cheer him on because he's the star quarterback. If Jameis Winston was not the quarterback of Florida State and he was just a citizen in the city of Tallahassee, I have a different feeling about this whole situation.
He'd probably be in jail right now.
Exactly. This wouldn't have been sitting around for 11 months before it got rediscovered. This would have been this incident happened December 7, 2012. December 8, 2012, he would have been brought in and questioned. So it's just pretty remarkable that this whole thing, and sports is weird like that. And after the decision, there were fans who were outside the courthouse. There's one set of fans who were body paint, shirtless, with Jameis spelled out. The whole thing just rubbed me the wrong way.
Yeah, and it kind of goes to show you kind of that other side of fandom that we always see. We saw it, you know, in the Paterno case when things were going down at Penn State a few years back. And just kind of that rabid love for your team sometimes clouds your judgment. And, you know, you talked about the laughter from the state attorney and the people in the office. Willie Mays was the Florida state attorney that made the announcement this afternoon. And there's a part of me that thinks that it wasn't genuine laughter. It was kind of more like nervous laughter. But, I mean, that's your job, man. You know, you speak in front of people all the time. Granted, this might be the biggest case Willie Mays has ever had to preside over, but you have to have some composure because not just for this girl that came forward, but for any girl that wants to come forward in the future, you know, how does that look to her? It's like they're just going to laugh at me. You know, and there's enough problems as it is with victims, you know, having the courage to come forward. And I'm not saying that's the case in this particular case, because like we said, we don't know, you know, we don't know who's good, who's bad, or if everybody's just a shade of gray. But the behavior shown by the people, you know, in that room when they were giving the press conference, it, like you said, it just kind of turned my stomach.
I think this is bigger than Jameis Winston, the laughter and the pandemonium that you saw. This is about Florida State. And like Nate hinted toward, when you think of Penn State, you think of Jerry Sandusky. So if something like this would have happened to Jameis to where he's investigated and, God forbid, convicted of sexual assault, now you're talking about Florida State, not just Jameis Winston. Whenever you bring up the name Florida State, oh, that's that rape school. That's their black cloud. So as far as these fans, they're big fans, and this is why I disassociate myself from being a fan of anything but myself, of course. These are fans who are representing not only Florida State, but themselves. This is a school they go to. So now that fandemonium is even more pronounced because now it's, let's say we're going to Florida State. We're standing up for Jameis Winston, you and me, because this is our school that we're going to. So they feel closer. I'm not justifying it, but I'm just saying I can see why they would think this way. And as far as, you know, the first place votes and whatnot with the Heisman, I would just like to clarify by saying I think that A.J. McCarron would have been the runaway winner of the Heisman Trophy, regardless of what happened to Jameis Winston, if Alabama would have won that game. But that's my main point, is that now Alabama's lost. I think in terms of first place votes, I think people now, they have nowhere else to go. And that's just one of the other caveats of Jameis Winston winning the Heisman Trophy.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Yeah.
So, you know, that's the kind of the good news, I guess, for Florida State, even though football is kind of secondary, even though I kind of hate that, you know, and we'll switch topics here in a second, but I kind of hate the fake sincerity that people in the sports media have to put on with stories like this, because, you know, I do have sympathy for the girl involved. I got sympathy for everybody involved. But this kind of thing where every story has to kind of be predated or put in the context of, well, you know, football is secondary or the Heisman is secondary. If it was secondary, we wouldn't be talking about it. You know, if Jameis Winston, like Marcus said, wasn't a star athlete, this case probably wouldn't have received national attention. So you can't separate the sports aspect from, you know, the criminal aspect or the legal aspect of the case, because, you know, they're both intertwined. And so my hope is that Jameis can kind of move forward from this. They got a big game this week. And also that, you know, the girl involved, that she can kind of move on from this and get her life together and receive whatever support or help she needs in this case. So, you know, that's Jameis Winston. And we'll talk more about him and his team next week, depending on what they do against Duke.
Go Duke.
The ACC championship in Charlotte. But real quick, I did want to pivot on to the other big story of the day. And in an ironic way, we're going to talk about a man that was a voice of justice and a voice of peace. And his final act was to bring peace to Twitter, which, as we know, can be very ratchet. And it was getting really ratchet after the Jameis Winston verdict from both sides. People just kind of, like Albert was saying, that pandemonium was really starting to run rampant on Twitter until about an hour later when we received the sad news that former South African President Nelson Mandela passed away at the age of 95. And, you know, he was a guy that, you know, I think one of the newscasters, might have been Tom Brokaw, put it so eloquently. And he was like, you know, this is a man that went from prisoner to president, from an enemy of the state to the head of state. You know, he spent 27 years in prison, came out, and instead of being bitter and being angry, he worked to end apartheid. He worked to make South Africa a better place. And, you know, he's somebody that I don't think you'll hear anybody say a bad word about. And just kind of the outpouring of love and remembrance and reflection and appreciation on Twitter after he passed was kind of a fitting kind of bookend to Nelson Mandela's life. And you know, he's somebody that, you know, you don't really think about people like Mandela on a day-to-day basis, but when they pass, it's like, you know, you sit back and see the tributes and read the biography and see that, you know, this dude was really one of the most remarkable people, you know, in our lifetime.
Yeah, it's no secret that, you know, I grew up, I'm very proud of my African heritage, and Nelson Mandela is a god within African communities. One of the worst days of my life is when I found out that he was not Liberian. Like, I grew up just thinking he was so universally accepted that I just grew up assuming, yeah, this is our Liberian hero. And for me to find out that he was South African, of course, it didn't taint Nelson Mandela in any way. It just made me sad that he wasn't one of us, but he still was. You know, he's just this universal figure that everybody, like you said, Nate, loves and reveres from Africa, from America, all over the world. And his life just played out like a movie. I knew the Nelson Mandela story back in front when I was like 12 years old, because just for him to go to prison and then become it's unheard of with any, you'll never see anything like that in America. The magnitude of how he was treated and how he rose from the ashes to the top of his industry. It was just amazing. And I really cannot wait for him to be immortalized after this, because now his legacy is only going to grow.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, it's a blessing that he lasted this long to live to 95. And especially fighting the health issues that he had earlier in the year and making it through and pulling it through to now was, you know, remarkable. You know, I can vaguely remember when Nelson Mandela came to speak at the Coliseum here in Los Angeles. And I believe it was, he died out of jail in 1990, so it might have been 1991 or 92 that he came and spoke in LA. I didn't attend, but I do remember just, you know, the hoopla of him coming. And he does have a sports attachment to sports. He was an amateur boxer at one point. And, you know, we've seen in movies his role with the Rugby World Cup in South Africa in 1995. And also he was involved in the World Cup in South Africa in 2010. So it's you mentioned, Nate, that it was sort of the right time, and the way that conversation was going on Twitter, it might have been, you know, he was probably, you know, he had to do what he had to do in order to defuse what was going to be and what could be tomorrow, for all we know, an ugly situation with you know, the Winston thing. So thoughts and prayers are out to the Mandela family.
Absolutely. And, you know, President Obama came out, talked about him tonight, and we've seen the kind of outpouring from both sides. Like, again, you talk about peace. This is probably the only story that you will see Fox News, MSNBC, and CNN all agree on and all have the same take on. And it's just kind of a really cool kind of tribute to Nelson Mandela. The one thing, though, that I would say is that I hope that people don't end up kind of sanitizing Mandela like we've seen happen to some extent with Martin Luther King, in the sense that, you know, Nelson Mandela, you know, we remember the smiling kind of older gentleman, but Nelson Mandela was a revolutionary. Like Nelson Mandela, you know, was kind of, for lack of a better term, he was a gangster. He was a G. And, you know, to just kind of remember this smiling, happy, graceful old man and not remember that, you know, this was a dude that fought for what he believed in, went to jail wrongly for what he believed in, you know, it's let's not forget what he did. You know, and I'll end off this segment with one of his best quotes, and he's saying, you know, to be free is not merely to cast off one's chains, but to live in a way that respects and enhances the freedom of others. And he definitely did that. And, you know, he will be missed. But kind of like President Obama said, you know, he belongs to the ages now. So, you know, his teachings and the example that he showed is not going to be forgotten. So rest in peace, Brother Mandela. And that's going to do it, I guess, for segment one. A lot of heavy stuff here, but we're going to take a break and come back and, you know, do what we do and have some fun and talk about all the great topics in the world of sports and entertainment and give the people what they want and give the people what they need. So we'll take a break and we'll come back in just a second with more Kings of Sport.
Got an opinion you want to share with the Kings? Well, have your say in one of three different ways. Visit Facebook.com/TheKingsOfSport. Email us at TheKingsOfSport@gmail.com and hit us up at CosPod on Twitter.
I'm expressing with my full capabilities, and now I'm living in correctional facilities. Cause some don't agree with how I do this. I get straight and meditate like a Buddhist.
Welcome back to the Kings of Sport, sports talk for our generation.
Hope of the world is in our generation. It's all left up to us to change this present situation. Take lesson from our elders. Don't make the same mistake. Let's fill the world with love and get rid of all the hate.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
And we are back on the Kings of Sport, back to the regular routine, and let's talk some sports, fellas, because this has been one of the wildest weeks of sports news that I can imagine, especially when it comes to the world of coaches. You know, you got the NFL where Mike Tomlin is tripping, the NBA where Jason Kidd is slipping, and of course the NCAA where Coach O is dipping.
I like that.
You know, I do what I can. But let's start with the NFL. Again, Mike Tomlin and Tripgate, I guess that's what we're going to call it. That's kind of the biggest news story out of the NFL in terms of off the field. Coach Tomlin fined $100,000 by the NFL, and are they still holding that draft pick in the pending, Marcus?
No, I believe it's just a fine.
Okay, because they were saying that they were looking into taking away a draft pick. But, yeah, so this is the kind of the big news going on. And Tomlin's come out and apologized profusely for what happened against that in a game against the Ravens and the greatest of all time, Jacoby Jones. But, you know, what were your thoughts about this whole incident and the punishment levied by the NFL? And we'll start with you, Marcus.
I didn't see the game live, so I saw the tweets on Twitter and then was trying to figure out what the hell happened, and I finally saw the clip. And, you know, at first I didn't think nothing of it, but I was watching it on my phone, and I saw it on TV, and it looked pretty intentional to me. Not a good look for a head coach. I don't know what he was thinking there. $100,000, that's about fair. The whole draft pick thing was silly to me. There's no way you can take the draft pick away from Pittsburgh for what he did. You know, fine him. You know, you can fine him $250 for all I care. But what Tomlin did shouldn't impact the rest of the players and the rest of the organization. So, a silly move. I'm glad no one got hurt. I'm glad, well, Jacoby Jones, he could have. Never mind. I won't bash Jacoby Jones. He was a non-factor in the league this year, so I won't bash him. But, you know, I'm glad everyone, you know, no one got hurt, and we can sort of move on from this. And not a good look for Mike Tomlin. Remember this incident. If somehow Pittsburgh decides to go in a different direction with the head coaching after the season.
Yeah, there's a couple of reasons I think this was made into such a big deal and why the NFL kind of dragged its feet on issuing a punishment and deciding whether or not it was going to take away draft picks. I think they wanted this to linger. They wanted this to be a story. They wanted people to see that draft picks were a possibility so that it wouldn't be repeated, so that coaches in the future know not to try to trifle with the NFL's rule. And there's a reason that there won't be draft picks. I'm with Marcus. Is that I think that's a little harsh.
One last thing before you go in. I was incorrect. So they're going to consider, after the draft order is set, they'll then determine what they're going to do with the draft pick.
Now, internally, they're not expected. The sources are saying that they don't expect that to happen, but yes, they're still waiting. There has not been a ruling on this. And the reason that the NFL is considering this, I think, is because Mike Tomlin is part of the NFL's competition committee. And these are supposed to be the NFL's choir boys and golden boys and boy scouts in terms of following the rule. And for him to do something so egregious and blatant, he has to have a harsher, stiffer punishment. And I know that Mike Tomlin has come out and said that it was an accident, it was a mistake. And I want to take him at his word. He does seem like a stand-up guy. But I think for people to believe that this was a mistake and, oh, Mike Tomlin just didn't know where he was standing and he likes watching it on the Jumbotron, I think that's an insult to Mike Tomlin's intelligence. I think he's way too smart to know to just stand. If you saw the clip, he's the only guy anywhere around that sideline. His entire staff is back. I find it insulting to his intelligence that we would think that he didn't know any better than to stand with his staff. So I do think that this was intentional, unfortunately, but I think that's just because Mike Tomlin's such a competitive guy.
Yeah, and I don't think Tomlin was trying to trip Jacoby. I do think he was trying to impede his progress. And, you know, you saw the clip, you know, with Tomlin, you know, with that Cheshire Cat grin on his face after the play happened. And, I'm a big fan of Mike Tomlin, just off top, full disclosure. You know, he went to Denby High School down here in Newport News, and he's always been, you know, one of these guys that has made it and has not forgotten the community down here. So, you know, he's a stand-up guy in my book. But I do agree with Marcus that the fine is warranted. You know, the amount really doesn't matter because he could pay it. You know, and they do have to, you know, go a little bit harsher on Mike Tomlin than somebody else because, like Alfred mentioned, he is on the competition committee. He does have a higher responsibility even than that of just being a head coach. My beef with the NFL is, you know, you mentioned that the draft pick could depend on where they're slotted in the draft. That to me sounds kind of fishy because it's like, if you're going to take the draft pick, just take the draft pick. Don't take the draft pick based on where the pick is because, you know, either what I did was egregious enough to warrant you taking that pick or it's not, you know. And it doesn't matter whether it's a high pick in the round or a low pick. You know, if you're going to take it, take it. But that being said, I think this was kind of a thing that was done to send a message to the other coaches throughout the league and really, you know, get people's attention. And in terms of Mike Tomlin being released or fired at the end of the year, I don't see that happening. It's any other organization maybe, but Pittsburgh, you know, they're not one to change coaches hastily. In fact, they're the opposite of that, where they have three head coaches in the history of the team or something like that.
Yeah, and another thing going in Mike Tomlin's favor, remember the Rooney Rule is that rule where you must interview at least one black candidate or minority candidate for every coaching vacancy, and that Rooney Rule came from the Rooneys who own the Steelers. And Mike Tomlin is, as you know, a minority,
yeah.
So I think he's going to get a little more rope.
And the other thing, if Mike Tomlin did get fired at the end of the season, there would be 15 teams lining up at his door the next day.
Absolutely.
Especially, you know, I'm down here in this area. D.C. would gladly throw, the fans at least, would gladly throw Shanahan under the bus in order to get Mike Tomlin. Speaking of being thrown under the bus, we got friends. You know, you and I are friends. Me and Alfred are friends. We're all friends. I wouldn't do y'all dirty. I wouldn't, you know, demote Alfred from a co-host on the Kings of Sport to the guy that puts in sound clips. I wouldn't do that to you, Big Nasty.
Good. It's good to know. I like that job security.
Yes. But there is somebody in the NBA who did his boy dirty. And we're not sure if there was some dirtiness being done to him. But Jason Kidd, somebody that's been in the spotlight lately for not only – you talk about coaches trying to get an advantage. We saw that foolish move what he did with the soda. Oh, hit me. Oh, I spilled my soda, Mr. Referee. Whatever are we going to do? We saw that move. And then coming on the heels of that, Lawrence Frank has been reassigned, I guess is the word they're using, from his position as an assistant coach in the Brooklyn Nets organization. And it's the Nets season wasn't going great to begin with, Marcus, but you know now this, it's like, whoo, how bad can it get?
Oh, it can get worse. They lost by 30 tonight to the Knicks, so it can get a whole lot worse for Brooklyn, unfortunately. You mentioned Lawrence Frank was demoted. Supposedly this happened, or what happened, the rift started reportedly during Jason Kidd's two-game suspension for his DUI. I guess Lawrence was upset that Jason didn't name Frank interim coach, and it's sort of been spiraling ever since. It doesn't help that the team is losing. I'm sure that's added stress to both men. But, you know, Kidd was brought in, and one of the reasons why I think most media members and critics felt like Brooklyn would be okay because he had Frank by his side on the bench as the associate head coach. And, you know, talking about a guy who's never coached professionally ever, he's coming off playing basketball last year, so having a guy who has done this for 9 years, who has coached Kidd in the NBA by his side was going to be a strong asset. It has not worked out. You mentioned Frank is now demoted. He's not even attending games, from what I can tell. Not on the bench. Still collecting a paycheck. I don't expect him to keep this role, you know, for the rest of the year. I'm sure eventually he'll be bought out of his contract. But the way Brooklyn is playing, it wouldn't surprise me if Jason Kidd would be the Nets one on his way out. They can't keep playing like this. The last two games at home, they've been blown out by 20-plus points. Yes, they're bad in a weak Eastern Conference, but, you know, for the amount of money that is spent on that roster and for the draft picks that were traded away to get these guys, they need to start winning and start winning now.
Yeah, and we talked about this in the summer when Jason Kidd was hired. The only reason I didn't have a problem with this was because of Lawrence Frank. A, because Lawrence Frank has a lot of coaching experience, and B, because he's so close, or at least we thought he was so close to Jason Kidd. And now that he's on his way out, it's like Jason Kidd is clearly in over his head. That has been out, you know, the consensus from day one. He got thrown out of a summer league game. He got a technical and thrown out of a summer league game. And then we saw the incident with the cup. He's clearly in over his head. And the decision is to give him more power. Of course they're going to lose by 30. And so just seeing Jason Kidd flounder like this without Lawrence Frank, I think if it's not working with Lawrence Frank, if Lawrence Frank is going, you got to look at these guys as a package deal. Because it's simply not going to get better with Jason Kidd out on his own for him to drown on his own, which is exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah, to me, when I think of the interaction between Lawrence Frank and Jason Kidd, I keep flashing back to that pivotal scene in New Jack City towards the end of the movie where Nino Brown and G-Money are on the bridge. And G-Money looks up and Nino Brown is like, Nino, CMB, we all we got. Did you forget? Am I my brother's keeper? And I can just imagine Jason Kidd looking back at Lawrence Frank. Yes. I am, before he pulls the trigger on his demotion. Because this doesn't make any sense whatsoever. Like you know, we said it, and everybody in the media said it. You know, one of the reasons that Nets fans had confidence in this arrangement was because they knew success under Lawrence Frank, coincidentally, you know, with Jason Kidd as his premier player. And for things to get this bad this quickly, you know, you mentioned the rift over the him not being an appointed interim coach. It's got to go deeper than that, Marcus. I think losing, like you mentioned, exacerbates the situation. But I think what you're seeing here is maybe Jason Kidd is letting his ego get in the way of what's best for business, to use a Triple H term. You know, he's like, you know, Lawrence Frank. Maybe he feels like Lawrence Frank is trying to usurp his authority, or the players aren't really paying attention to him. Because I don't know if you remember, especially going back to that incident with the cup, when Jason Kidd knocked over the cup to get more time, he didn't go over there in the huddle and start drawing up plays. That was the assistants that were doing that. Like, Jason Kidd's not even drawing up plays in the game. You know, I know every coach is not an X and O coach, but at some basic level, I think Jason Kidd, like Alfred said, is in over his head. And when people get in over their head, they tend to do desperate acts. And I think that, you know, demoting Lawrence Frank was an act maybe made out of desperation, maybe made out of hurt feelings. But either way, I don't think it's a good look for the Brooklyn Nets.
It's not a good look, and you know, they're 5-14. They're lucky to have 5 wins. If you look at their schedule, they beat Miami by 1 point. They beat Phoenix by 2 points in overtime. They beat Toronto by 2 points. They beat Utah, who was the worst team in the NBA, and they beat Memphis last Saturday. So, not really the stellar standout resume you have there, and it's not going to get any easier for them with Paul Pierce being sidelined, with Darren Williams still out, but he's expected back next week. So I really don't know what direction this team is going to head in. It wouldn't surprise me if Jason Kidd doesn't make it through the entire season.
That'll give me my next question. Do you think, yes or no, both of you guys, do you think Kidd survives to the end of the season? And if not, you know, do you think that the Nets will find some way, whether Kidd's in charge or not, to make the postseason?
Man, I could almost see Jason Kidd suiting up for point guard at this point. They're so thin at guard. I mean, Sean Livingston is now your starting point guard till
Sean Livingston.
Darren Williams gets healthy, right? I don't see Kidd making it past the. Well, they have a stretch in the end of December. They have to go to at Indiana, at San Antonio, at Oklahoma City. I think by the end of that trip, January 3rd, I think Kidd is gone. And they
so
go.
So you think that's the farewell tour?
He gone!
Yeah, I think that trip is going to kill them. Especially Pierce will still be out with a broken hand. So I don't see him making it throughout the year, and I don't see them making the playoffs.
I don't see Jason Kidd making it throughout the year, but I see a new coach being inserted, a spark being lit, and this is the Eastern Conference where, what, two teams have a winning record and the Wizards are your 3 seed? Yeah, they still have plenty of time. I think the Nets can back into the playoffs.
Have you seen Kevin Garnett play?
Yeah, I know. They look bad right now, but I refuse to believe that a team with this much talent, and when they get healthy, is going to be kept out of the playoff race. I do see them making the playoffs.
But at what point do you have to decide, all right, look, this team, regardless if we make the playoffs or not, this team is going to win a title. We have given up all of our draft picks until 2018. At what point do we start trading pieces away in order to start building for the future?
No, that's a great question.
I.e. Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce would be the two pieces I had in mind.
And well, those are the pieces that Celtics had in mind, and the Nets fell for the bait. Now for they've already got to go first, so I don't think the Nets would get too much out of that.
Who's going to trade a cow for these magic beans?
Exactly.
I could see the Clippers trading for Kevin Garnett.
Yeah, I can see that.
I forget which one of the two are free agents after the year. If they both are, or I know one of them signed a new deal. I think it was Pierce. So I believe KG might be a free agent after the end of the year. So I could see him getting before Pierce, but at some point you got to start thinking beyond this year. And this team, if you take away Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett, they're not very good, and they're very old.
Yeah, I definitely think I'm trying to be an optimist, and it's like I'm trying to give J. Kidd the benefit of the doubt. But yeah, I could easily see him being dismissed before the season concludes. And as far as the playoff goes, Alfred mentioned it's a wide open East, and Lord knows I'm secretly cheering for the Charlotte Bobcats to get a premier playoff spot. But even in this weakened East, I just don't see Brooklyn putting things together, at least not in enough time to make a significant playoff run. And it might be, like, as Marcus alluded to, you know, time to start thinking about the future. Especially, you know, Prokhorov is not the most patient owner. There's a lot of owners out here who will let their teams kind of flounder for a while. Michael Jordan. But Prokhorov ain't that dude.
And he has the money to eat a contract if he has to.
He does.
Yeah, he will gladly do that. You know, I think the one person out of this that is actually, you know, kind of smiling this whole thing is Avery Johnson. Because he's like, see, it wasn't all my fault.
And Lawrence Frank is smiling, too. The day after you leave, you get blown out by 30 points. I'm sure he's smiling, too.
Yeah. Lawrence Frank and or Avery Johnson would definitely have a job before I think Jason Kidd gets a second job if he is fired at the end of the season. But speaking of the end of the season, I didn't know how powerful this podcast was, ladies and gentlemen, until this next event occurred. For those of you that listen on a weekly basis, and why wouldn't you? This is a guaranteed tremendous show. But last week, I believe, one of the kings of sport said that USC coach Ed Orgeron was not going to make it to the end of the season. Little did we know he was sprinkling some of that Liberian hoodoo on top of his prediction, because lo and behold, Big Nasty, you was right.
I don't like wishing the downfall on anybody. Let me just make that clear. I like seeing people succeed. And I loved, who didn't like
who didn't love Coach
Ed Orgeron?
Yeah.
Who didn't love Coach O, you know? But I loved him in a way. I loved him in a way that I love the babysitter or the substitute teacher that comes in and the hard-ass teacher isn't there. You know that hard-ass teacher's going to get the best out of you. But damn it, that substitute teacher for that week-long period is going to – you're going to have fun with them, and maybe you're going to learn a thing or two. And that's what Coach O was. You know, and we don't need somebody like that. Everybody is in USC land is so hard for the Pete Carroll era, and they're still trying to hire Pete Carroll. And Coach O reminded so many people of Pete Carroll just based on his energy and the energy on USC sidelines, which was non-existent during the Lane Kiffin era. I love Coach O. Best assistant in the country in my estimation, but not a head coach, not head coaching material. And it's unfortunate that he's gone and that they weren't able to keep Coach O with Sark. But it's for the best. Like, I got to tell you, it's for the best.
I think it's for the best. If you would have kept Coach O with Sark, there would have been a natural competition there with the players who were, I mean, you know, reportedly crying after the decision was announced because they were so in love with Coach O that you have players who would, you know, favor Coach O, and you can't have it as a new coach here. So I understand why Sark is bringing his whole team in from Washington, or as many guys as he can bring in. In terms of the actual hire itself, I know it was a hire that USC fans didn't like for a few reasons. The main one is they were expecting a bigger, sexier name. I don't get what you this job is not the same job as it was 5 years ago. I think the sanctions have really dampened this program. It's really made it hard for recruiting, and part of that, you know, part of what happened with Lane Kiffin wasn't his fault because he was really hamstrung in terms of, you know, scholarships. So I'm not sure who USC fans thought was coming to Southern California to take this job. I don't have a problem with the hire. You're talking about a guy who's someone who's familiar with recruiting in the area, a guy who is familiar with USC, the program. This is his, I think, fifth time now back with the program. And, you know, yes, you know, I understand that he is linked to Lane Kiffin when they were calling plays together, and they're good friends. But I think, you know, he's probably the best guy for the job. James Franklin would have been nice, yeah, but he doesn't know the area. We don't know really how good Vanderbilt is in SEC, so I don't have a problem with the hire.
Yeah, I think Sarkis is a good hire. He's what, 34-29. Overall, as a head coach at Washington, but this year, you know, they're coming off of a good season. Like you said, he does have a familiarity with the program, you know, and I don't see any player revolts happening with Coach Sarkisian, like we saw with Lane Kiffin. I don't see somebody coming out saying Sark don't know. But in terms of Coach O, you know, I guess the offer was made to coach in the bowl game for the Trojans, and he was like, nah, I'm good, fam. But what's your opinion on that, and do you think that Coach O has a future as a head coach in the NCAA?
I do think that Coach O somewhere will land as a head coach, just because people are going to see the effect he had on a UFC program that died, really. It just felt dead around here, and he revitalized him. So I do think he's created some stock. Not a big-time program, but somewhere, maybe a mid-major somewhere. I do think he'll land as a head coach. I think it's part of the reason that he resigned is because he knows he can get paid more as a head coach based on what he did at USC. Now, as far as the Sark hire, my main problem with that hire is the Pete Carroll thing. I just don't – I understand how big Pete Carroll was around here, and I do have an affinity for Pete Carroll. You got to just move on eventually. And I just feel like USC is still trying to live in the past as far as what Pete Carroll delivered. And the thing about Carroll, as much as I did love Pete Carroll, let's be honest, we know what Pete Carroll has become. He left USC like a con man would leave a burning building as part of an insurance fraud with all the stakes left behind.
Like a
and now he's
in
with Seattle. And now he's with Seattle, which, okay, best team in the NFL, I'll give you that. But let's not act like we're going to ignore all the dirty types of violations they've been part of with Pete Carroll under control. Most PED violations of any team in the NFL, and it's not even close. Let's not act like that has nothing to do with Pete Carroll, who
don't slander Pete.
To get away with stuff like that when there's a player's coach and you love Pete Carroll and you think you can get away with more. I think he just creates that kind of culture. It's a lot like JFK, how America is enshrined JFK over this 50th anniversary thing. Yes, he's a great man and this, that, and the other. He was a serial adulterer and a womanizer, okay? Let's act like we don't know what happened behind closed doors. If TMZ was around and they had that kind of access, he'd be no better than a Kardashian in this day and age. But yet he's enshrined because of the greatness that he brought and because of the brand of JFK. And I feel like that applies to Pete Carroll in some sense.
Side question. Bigger pimp, JFK, MLK?
Oh, that's a good question. If you know what's going on,
because Martin had his share.
Oh,
of
he yeah, he definitely did.
I'm gonna say let's just say JFK.
So he's went to the mountaintop.
He's at the better resume based on Marilyn Monroe. So we'll give it to JFK.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, but you also had to think Martin was like playing with a handicap. Like JFK was in the major league, Martin was in the Negro League. You know
why? Because he couldn't dip into the vanilla.
You know, Martin's options were limited. He couldn't even really take nobody out to a restaurant if he wanted to.
No.
You know, Martin was playing in the dead ball era. You know what I'm saying? JFK was like on some steroids with his game.
So Martin's statue page then.
Yeah, Martin's statue page. JFK is like Mickey Mantle. He's just, era, you want to come back to the hotel? I can have Frank Sinatra come in and sing a song, era.
So he had more talent to work around. So that has to. It's like the Tom Brady Peyton Manning to be.
So Martin Luther King is Peyton Manning?
Oh, no. I think Martin Luther King would be Tom Brady because he doesn't have as much talent to work with.
Oh, the blasphemy. The blasphemy. But real quick, Marcus, do you see Coach O getting another job maybe as early as next season? Head coach.
I do see him get another job. I don't think he'll get as much money as he was being paid at USC. He was the highest paid assistant coach in the country. So I think unless he lands at a bit program, he's going to have to take a bit of a pay cut. But I think he'll get one last chance to prove himself as a head coach. Remember, he did not coach well at Ole Miss when he was after his first USC run. So, the verdict is still out in terms of his coaching skills. But we'll see. He was 10-25 at Ole Miss. He was 6-2. During his stint here, he had more conference wins this year than Sark had in 5 years at Washington. So he did a great job. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, even if he doesn't get back to the level of a school with the prestige of USC, there's a lot of jobs out there. You know, there's a lot of schools out there that would love to have a coach, you know, who with the name that Coach O kind of developed this season leading that team. So, you know, good luck to Coach O. And on behalf of the Kings of Sport, we're sorry. Big Nasty cost you a job, man.
Sorry, Al.
But we're going to step to the side. And much like an Alabama special teams coordinator when Nick Saban comes around, we're going to dip for a second because we are coming back with the Ringside Wrap, and I'm sure we'll have some great topics to talk about. We might have differing opinions, but I'm sure by the end of next segment, we'll all be unified. So stick and stay. We got more Kings of Sport right after this.
Scissors and it wants to break out. There's a killer in the hall and he's punching it all. Bang, bang! Go his dog and he's hungry for more. You can see it, you can feel it, metal to your head. Might as well
hell, kiss a monster, laugh in front of your dead. Yeah, because of you, I got this brand new idea. Let's take over this mansion, tell some stories in here. Who can cook? Who can clean? Who will paint the fence? Who can cook? Who can clean? Who will paint the fence? Who can cook? Who can clean? Who will paint the fence? I will.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
And now, it's time to get you caught up on the week's biggest stories from the world of professional wrestling. It's the Ringside Wrap on the Kings of Sports.
Welcome back to the Kings of Sport. Marcus, Nasty, and Nate. And for once, all three of us have something in common when it comes to the world of fantasy football. Because neither of us are going to be playing a playoff game this week. Nobody is playing a game this week.
I got a bye. You got a bye.
For full disclosure.
Now, I think I'm playing a consolation game, man. Don't take my credit away from me.
I was specific. I said nobody is playing a playoff game. Not me, not you, not Marcus. Nobody's playing a playoff game this week. And again, for full disclosure, it's because with Marcus and Nate, they weren't very good this year. Just an off year. It happens. Not to me, but it happens. And for me, it's because I was too good. Now, I would like to invite you guys, as a division champion and somebody who earned a bye week, to take the same advice I gave to my teammates and to my players and staff and general managers. I said, take the week off, find a sauna, kick back, and listen to an audiobook, you know, because it's going to soothe your soul. Listen to an audiobook provided by Audible.com. Because Audible.com is a premier provider of digital audiobooks. Audible has over 100,000 titles to choose from in every genre, from thrillers, business, romance, comedy, sci-fi, and more. Audible titles play on iPhone, Kindle, Android, and more than 500 devices for listening anytime, anywhere. And for you, yes, you, the listeners of the Kings of Sport podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. Let me run down a couple of these titles for you. We've got The Hobbit and the Bridge by J.R.R. Tolkien, The Witness by Nora Roberts, As Always, Wrestling with the Devil, The Lex Luger Story. If you don't know it, get an audiobook and learn it. And of course, we have The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich, A History of Nazi Germany by William L. Shire. Didn't think I was going to get that out in one breath. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/thekingsofsport. Again, that's audibletrial.com/thekingsofsport for your free audiobook. And let me just throw in one more bonus audiobook that I recommend you read, strongly recommend, and that would be The Undisputed Truth by Mike Tyson and Larry Solomon, narrated by Joshua Henry. So it's not Mike Tyson, but it's still a great story. And I'm sure if WWE fans had a chance to vote on what The Undisputed Truth should be called, the Mike Tyson story, it would be The Unified Truth. Because that's what fans voted on in terms of what the new singular championship in the WWE should be. It's funny because last week, WWE announced that John Cena and Randy Orton were going to be in a ladder match, TLC match, to decide who the singular one champion would be. But they were very, very careful not to say undisputed, not to say unified. They said the goal was to have one champion. So I think a lot of fans became restless and thought they were going to get screwed. WWE came out this past week and they went all in telling everybody there's going to be one champion. We guarantee it. Still, Raw drew a 2.65, tied for the lowest rating of the year. Marcus, can Raw rebound next week with a special Slammy Award edition? And in addition to that, what do you think about the whole undisputed title picture?
For Raw to rebound next week, it's going to take a surprise or two, a surprise return or two coming back, because Raw the last month or so has been just hard to watch. I don't blame people for wanting to watch Monday Night Football over WWE Raw. So I'm not surprised at the 2.65. Is it the end of the world? No. Is it a bad sign for, you know, what's in store? Not really, because usually January is when they start to hit the reset button. So if they can find a way to get through December and get through this pay-per-view, I think they'll be fine. In terms of the main event for that pay-per-view, part of me still believes that we're not going to get an actual champion. We'll get a fought finish somehow. But I really hope we do get a unified champion. What they haven't answered was, or the question that still remains is, what happens with the belts? Are we going to have a situation like Jericho where he had two titles, or will they just fade out the big gold belt and use the new WWE title? So I believe Cena will win. It just made sense. Why not? Yeah, I think he's earned that right for the last 10 years of work he's done to be the unified champion, and we'll see what happens from there.
Yeah, for me, you know, the ratings weren't surprising. I mean, they were going up against the marquee matchup on Monday Night Football with the Saints and the Seahawks. So from that aspect, it's not a big deal. But the continued downward trend in the numbers and the pay-per-view buys, it's not catastrophic, but it probably is raising some eyebrows up in Stamford. And I wouldn't be surprised if these ratings don't improve going into January, if we don't see the Power Strut show back up on TV, because that seems to be their go-to whenever the ratings start to plummet a little bit. In terms of the unification match, I'm glad that they kind of went explicit with it, because now it almost guarantees, even though you can never say never in professional wrestling, that, you know, we will get a legit finish. And like Marcus said, I think Cena's got to be the guy to win that title. But that's about it in terms of where my interest is with the WWE product right now, because in terms of the TLC pay-per-view, I was more excited for the TLC movie on VH1 with Lil Mama Star in his left eye than I am to see what they put together for this pay-per-view that's coming up after it.
Yeah, and the thing is, WWE's created such a culture of disappointment in 2013 that whenever they announce now that we're going to have one champion, there's going to be a match for a unified championship, people are just skeptical. And I think the reason WWE came out and did this, I seriously think that WWE and Triple H and the powers that be, they had it in them that, yes, we're going to have a shady finish. The finish is going to be both guys are going to come down with one title. And I think people sniffed them out. And there's been so much disarray and creative that I think this was just a change in direction of WWE saying, okay, we have to have one champion because people are already calling our bluffs. So now they've at least announced it. But again, I'm still skeptical. They said we're going to have one champion. They didn't specify that it's going to be John Cena or Randy Orton. I could see somebody like The Big Show, like Triple H, running down there and taking those titles if both men are knocked out. This is a TLC no disqualification match. We could still see a cheap, shady finish. And I just think WWE, it's just too early. It was the main reason that I'm skeptical is I wouldn't see the titles being unified at TLC. And if they are unified, I would expect the WWE title to win out because they just created that new championship. They can't just go back and create another undisputed championship. And the product's a mess. Nate, you said that once the ratings start plummeting, you expect to see the power strip. Well, they've been plummeting. I mean, they've bottomed out now. It's the lowest rating of the year. I can't imagine the Slammy's themed show with so many guest appearances. I'd be shocked if Vince McMahon didn't show up next week.
It seems fitting because you figure he wants to have a say in this match, you know. He, you know, I don't expect him to get involved, but I think he'll at least comment. You know, he still is the, you know, the chairman of this company. You mentioned about the finish of the TLC match. The only way I would support a fought finish would be if the new champion was determined by the Royal Rumble in January. Otherwise, I just want this to be over with. But if they say for some reason both guys grab the title, the winner of the Rumble wins the title, sort of like Flair back in 92. I'd be down with that. That'd be fun.
Yeah, and I mean, they could have said that it was the 20th year since that happened, you know, 20 years since the Royal Rumble was competed for that, but it was in 92. So I would be sure that they would do it at the Royal Rumble if that had happened in 93. But, yeah, you know, I would be very excited to see Royal Rumble competed for a WWE championship just because the Royal Rumble is one of the few entities in WWE that has been protected. And I would love to see the winner of the Royal Rumble walk off with the title. I think that's one of the ways that you could lead to a unified title match at WrestleMania, Nate.
Especially if the Ultimate Warrior's in it, like I predicted.
Stop it.
How great would that be?
Warriors!
I came down on a spaceship to unify what has been broken.
The worlds are going to collide and create a new warrior championship.
I'm ignoring all of you guys. I can't hear you guys.
It's going to happen.
It's not going to happen.
You didn't hear that? That electric guitar riff, he's going to come running down and limping down. It'll take a while. The thing is, the warrior, by the time he gets down there, they'll be at the final four. You know, he'll take so long to run down there that they'll be at the final four, so he'll only have to worry about three other guys.
Oh, man, yeah. I think
he's going to win that Royal Rumble.
I mean, that would be a cool, you know, way to solve this conundrum. But, I mean, it's kind of like they're writing themselves into a corner. And, again, it does seem like something that they changed last minute because, you know, they did something that the WWE rarely does as opposed to a company like TNA. You know, they let the smarks get to them, you know, in terms of the dirt sheets and the internet sites kind of all calling this screw job finished. So they're like, well, we're going to change it up so you don't understand. You don't understand. We're doing what's best for business. So I just want to see some resolution because the whole corporate deal is not really working for me right now. And, you know, I would like to see Cena get the belt and then, you know, kind of move everything on to new challenges. And you know, so let's start getting on that road to WrestleMania.
Of course, and you talk about WWE painting themselves into a corner. They're no strangers to doing that, whether it's booking their TV or whether it comes to their business. When WWE was originally announced for the WWE Network, they said that it was going to debut, I believe, what was this, 2011 or 2012? And eventually just kept getting pushed back, and as they came closer to the date, they kept having to push it back, but now it looks like WWE has once again launched a date as to when they can debut the WWE Network. And Marcus, if you can help us out, tell us the latest update from the WWE Network.
So there's a date, like an actual date this time, not like a coming soon in April. No. Like this is a hard date, February 24th, 2014. WrestleZone, your buddy Justin Labar, Alfred.
JLP.
Broke some news that laid out the details of the WWE Network. It's going to be a network, but it's not going to be through your cable provider. It'll be through internet TV devices at Roku and Google Chromecast. The cost will be between $10 and $12 a month. And reportedly that upon launch on the February 24th, that every episode of Raw, SmackDown, and every pay-per-view will be available. On top of that, you can access every future pay-per-view with the exception of WrestleMania. And then also, next year's WrestleMania 30 will be available to the WWE Network subscribers who buy into an early bird special of $60 for 6 months of service. So it seems like this is true because there's another story that says that Vince McMahon will be at the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas, which is the big annual electronics show. And he will be on hand to make an announcement on January 8th. So it finally looks like we're getting a network after 2 years now.
It's about damn time is all I can say. I mean, people think that I don't like the WWE, but I'm a fan of especially a lot of their back catalog. You know, I was one of the people that WWE 24/7. Back in the day, I used to stay up on that because they would have, you know, all the cool little documentaries and the vintage shows. And I thought that was a really good way to take advantage and monetize your library and use all your resources. And so even though this isn't a network per se, this probably is the best outcome for a WWE quote-unquote network in terms of, you know, they are ahead of the curve, you know, with Google Chrome and Roku, like you're saying, Marcus, and also, you know, the Xbox One and things of that nature. The streaming content is the kind of the wave of the future and also the wave of the now. And I think it's actually a smart move by the WWE to kind of get into this. And, you know, it's a fair price point. And, you know, right off the bat, you've got all the SmackDowns, all the Raws, all the old pay-per-views. You know, it's a great value, and I could actually see this succeeding.
Yeah, and it's the best case scenario for WWE in terms of this network and where it was going. It would have just created a huge cost center having to finance a 24-hour cable network. Look at Oprah. Oprah has a Midas touch when it comes to everything. She touched Dr. Phil. He turned into gold. Rachel Ray, she turned into gold. And she's still trying to struggle to put on her own network because it's hard. Cable networks are very difficult, and it would have been very hard to convince the wrestling fans to pay, especially casual fans, to pay for a network. But with this system, a Netflix type, Hulu type system in this age, it's going to fit perfectly, especially with how many wrestling fans are now on the internet, how WWE has become more social media active, and how for $12 for a pay-per-view, that's a lot of people are going to look at it like, well, I'm only paying $12 for a monthly pay-per-view, and they're going to look at that as a great deal. So yes, that pay-per-view business is going to suffer in a sense, but they're going to be able to recoup that from the WWE network. So I really love the fact that they're going to go with this subscription internet service, much like Netflix. I think it's going to work.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I think this is a great idea, and I'm assuming that this is something that you can be able to access like via iPad. So, you know, it's much better to take your wrestling with you as opposed to being attached to, you know, your TV and having to watch at home. So I think this is going to work out. And plus, you know, I wouldn't be surprised down the road if we get every WCW Nitro, every WCW Thunder, every WCW pay-per-view. I mean, they own the right. So I think it's just a matter of time. And once they figure out how to support all this content in terms from a bandwidth perspective, that also includes ECW. They own the rights for the tape library there. So I think they're really onto something here if they provide access to all of their tapes and all of their previous shows and pay-per-views.
Yeah, there's a lot of content that they're not taking advantage of. And on a side note, I know Marcus has a spoilerific topic coming up next. But in terms of a future side project, once this thing gets off the ground and let's say these WCW products become available, I'm already pitching an idea for a weekly Thunder podcast. We go through and review.
How awesome would that be?
WCW Thunder. Nobody's talking about Thunder these days.
We've got to talk about the episode where David Arquette wins the World Championship. Yes. That would be the first. But it's funny you mentioned WCW because WCW has been carrying WWE's DVD sales. You look at how DVDs sell with WWE, and WrestleMania does well, but a lot of other DVDs have been disappointing, and WCW, the History of Nitro, or the Best of Nitro, those series have been doing great business for WWE, as well as the Goldberg DVD, so fans love nostalgia. This is just going to be another avenue for nostalgia, and I think that's going to be a big part of the WWE network, or at least it should, from a business standpoint, is to show fans, oh, here's what ECW was like, here's what WCW was like, and the Mid-South footage that they have, all that stuff is going to get really over with wrestling.
I mean, the mark is there. I mean, how many friends do you have that don't watch wrestling now, but if you told them, you know, hey, there's a Best of WCW or there's a Best of ECW, they'd be like, oh, that's cool, I want to watch that. There's a fan base in the audience that left after the Monday Night Wars were over that never came back. And that's a market that I think they've capitalized it to a certain extent, but it's still pretty much untapped in terms of the money that they could gain from such a project.
Yeah.
And we talked about this with – yeah, go ahead, Marcus.
I mean, if they had an option that was just for – the archives and not for pay-per-views and made it cheaper, like $6.95. I think people who were fans back in the 80s would subscribe to that and just watch stuff they grew up on. I mean, could you imagine going back and watching Wrestling Challenge from the 80s and 90s and Superstars and Saturday Night's Main Event? I mean, I think people would be interested in watching that because the product, you know, sad to say, isn't that good now. So I think you can really, you know, tap into, based on your current product, you can really use this to benefit your archives.
Yeah, and we talked about this with Alfredo Torres, Nate, in that even though I am of the wrestling generation of today, I pine for that era, and I wish that I was around for the era of the Freebirds and, you know, the Dusty Rhodes in his prime and Ric Flair in his prime of the 80s. And that's most of what I watch on YouTube when it comes to wrestling. You know, as much as I love the Attitude Era, I love watching what kind of storylines were in place and what type of matches they used to have back in the day. And that's something that I would love to watch on the WWE Network is stuff from, you know, WCW back in the day, NWA and whatnot. But the WCW of today, one could argue, is TNA. And Nate alluded to the spoilerific topics Marcus has. So
spoiler.
Yeah, there you go. Give him the spoiler. Me personally, I don't read spoilers, but I'm very interested to hear what exactly happened. So, Marcus, if you have a rundown of TNA over the next month or the next couple of tapes in the can, go ahead and give it to us.
Let's just get to the important stuff. Let's not worry about the filler. So the big story after tonight's taping is there are possibly two TNA superstars that are heading out the door. The first one is AJ Styles, who did return to Impact for the January 2nd episode and challenged Badness for, spoiler alert, he wins the tournament. Challenge Madness to a match, and the episode was filmed tonight, from what it sounds like, for the January 9th show, and Madness defeated AJ Styles, and after the match, AJ said, storyline or no storyline, Dixie Carter could forget about AJ Styles, and he thanked the fans for his career, and he went around shaking hands, and that was that. So, he still doesn't have a contract, so, you know, unless they come up with some deal at the last minute, I could see him, you know, actually walking away from TNA. The second guy who I didn't know about was Jeff Hardy, who, the night before tonight, Wednesday night, similar situation where he wrestled, and he thanked the fans and said this would be his last match in TNA. So, you know, it could be just TNA being TNA and trying to, you know, work the fans and work the internet. But if both these guys are out of contract now, then I, based on the way money's been with the company and how they've been sort of leery on re-signing guys, it wouldn't surprise me if both these guys were gone.
Yeah, those are two big losses, and I don't think both of them would be works. I think either one or the other would be a work. You know, it wouldn't make any sense to have two guys working the retirement angle. But let's just go on the assumption that both of these guys are actually going to be done with the company. I think from a monetary standpoint, it makes sense, you know, in terms of if you're trying to restructure this company and rebuild the company to a certain extent, you know, you got to cut some of the fat, for lack of a better phrase. But the AJ in particular, the AJ deal, that comes off as more surprising than Hardy, because Hardy can always get a job regardless of what people say. Hardy can get a job in the WWE. AJ Styles, I'm not quite so sure. You know, I'm sure he could get tons of indie work and probably have a hero's welcome going back to ROH. But in terms of making that federation money, I don't really see that in AJ Styles' future. So it's going to be interesting, Alfred, to see if this really is an actual deal, or if, you know, it's just another step in the AJ Dixie story.
Yeah, and I agree with you. It just would, I know this is TNA, but it really would not make sense to do back-to-back retirement angles like this. And so I do think that the AJ aspect is kind of a work. I just have a feeling that they have a sweetheart deal with him.
Well, let me add this detail before you go into that. So okay. More about the Jeff Hardy thing. So this is according to WrestleZone. After the match, Jeff Hardy paid tribute to Sting and then said that he was tired of all the mess that was TNA and pretty much said that this would be the last time we'd see him in TNA until things change. So that sounds more like the work, but the AJ thing sounds more like he doesn't have a contract. It's been months now. He got that a contract extension, which was temporary. So it sounds like AJ is more legit than Jeff Hardy. Sounds more like a work type.
If you were going to keep a guy from a Spike or from a Panda standpoint, even though AJ's kind of been a heart and soul of TNA, Jeff Hardy would make more sense from a marketing standpoint to keep.
He would.
But at this point, is it going to be that difference in the business that TNA has been looking for? Because clearly, it hasn't made the impact that they thought it was going to make, which has been the case with every big name they've signed. And TNA, it's one of those things where TNA's base is really all they have. They're going to do that 1.0 rating. They're going to hover around there because of those hardcore fans. So if you cut ties with AJ Styles because you think that Jeff Hardy is going to be a bigger name and do better business, you might have set that base, and if that base goes away, you got nothing.
Yeah, but I mean, this is the same base that hated Hulk Hogan for the most part, and they suffered and stuck with the company through those Hogan Bischoff years. So I think you get a lot of vocal minority on the internet that would be pissed off about TNA cutting ties with AJ Styles. But at the end of the day, what are you going to do? Watch a terrible Thursday night NFL game if you're a TNA fan? No, you're going to tune into Impact. So I think they're going to have that million fan, around that million number fan base, you know, regardless. And from a business standpoint, even though I don't really agree with it, Jeff Hardy makes more sense if you're talking to, you know, advertisers or investors. You know, he's got the Jeff Hardy app on iTunes. So it makes more sense from that standpoint. But Alfred, in terms of AJ's prospects, I think the WWE is a long shot, and I think he's probably the best shot would be, you know, go to ROH and kind of be like the ROH icon.
Yeah, that wouldn't be a bad role for him. I mean, you know, at this point, if he hasn't got the call from Stanford yet, it's pretty much going to be,
you're too short, brother.
Yeah, he's 36 at this point, so I can see him. I mean, especially he's coming off this whole angle where he's been taking the title to, you know, shows in AAA and New Japan. So it wouldn't surprise me if he went the, you know, international route, but you could always go to ROH and find a home there.
Let's say the Jeff Hardy thing is not a work. Does he show up at the Royal Rumble? Does he show up at the Royal Rumble?
No.
Nate?
I say no, but it wouldn't surprise me if he showed up shortly thereafter. Because nice. I mean, even now, they're still in a position where they don't have, or they haven't shown the confidence in too many baby faces outside of Cena and CM Punk, and to a certain extent, Daniel Bryan. And regardless of his past indiscretions, Jeff Hardy would still be a bigger babyface star than, you know, most of the other guys on the roster right now.
The only reason I say no is I'm pretty sure his contract probably is a 90-day non-compete for WWE. So if the Rumble was a little later, then maybe. But WrestleMania would be a possibility. His 90 days would be up if, you know, say if this happened, if his contract was up December 1st or something like that, then yeah, I could see WrestleMania, but not the Rumble.
Is that more of a legal thing, though, or is that something WWE could just buy its way out of, or just kind of throw some money at TNA and say we're going to do this because it's a
no, spot? I don't think that relationship is exactly...
Because they had the Ric Flair talent exchange. I mean, that worked out pretty well when they had... They gave Christian to TNA, and TNA gave Ric Flair them, and it went off without... You know, without a hitch. That's why I say this, because I would absolutely agree with you, Marcus, any other way, but when I saw that go down, I mean, when WWE wants a big star and they want a certain time and venue, I mean, Ric Flair was under contract still working with TNA, and they had him attend the Hall of Fame. So,
attending Hall of Fame is different. Having the guy wrestle in the Rumble is a little, it's a little more dicey. And if I'm TNA, I wouldn't want that. I would sue Jeff Hardy in a second if he showed up at the Rumble.
Yeah.
I think Jeff Hardy shows up at the Royal Rumble. You know why? Because I think he goes in at entrant number 4. Speaking of number 4, segment 4 is next.
We've always said the Kings of Sport was the best podcast around, but now the reviews are in and the people have spoken. Here's what you had to say about the show. This is a sports podcast for the people, by the people. There are no old guys talking about the good old days. These are brothers that are connected to what's going on now. They bring you the latest information as well as comparing current events to historical ones. If there is one sports podcast that you need to listen to, make it this one. This is a very good show with three brilliant co-hosts who keep it real. Younger guys with great minds for sports. They have differing opinions and back it up with facts and figures. Always entertaining and an enjoyable listen. I am down with the Kings. The Kings of Sport is the best thing going on the internet. These guys rock. Give them a listen. You won't be disappointed. So there you have it. But you don't have to take their word for it. Find out for yourself. Listen to the Kings of Sport and make up your own mind. We guarantee we're the best show around.
Why don't you empower yourself and don't need them and do it yourself?
How, Sway?
Take a few steps back.
You ain't got the answers, man. You ain't got the answers. You ain't got the answers. You ain't got the answers, Sway.
Kanye.
I've been doing this more than you.
Doing what you
ain't got.
Come on,
you ain't got the answers. You ain't got the answer.
And we are back on the Kings of Sport, ready to close up shop for another week. But before we do, you know we got to give you what you want. We got to give you what you need. And what you want and what you need is the latest in the world of ratchetness from sports and entertainment and just general pop culture. And so we're going to give it to you because we are the show that is running things like former quarterback of the West Canyon Coyotes, Lance Harbor, rest in peace, brother Paul Walker. But last week, one of the most interesting conversations we have ever had on this program centered around a man that is a genius, a revolutionary, a groundbreaking trailblazer, and apparently somebody that's not good at selling tickets, at least in Kansas City, I guess, and that is Yeezy. He makes his second appearance on the Kings of Sport two consecutive weeks. And, you know, we all heard about the interviews, and we talked about just kind of what's been going down with Kanye, brother Marcus, but this latest story, I mean, this is not just something that affects his pride, but it affects his pocketbook. It affects his wallet. What went down with Kanye West?
So Kanye West performed in Kansas City Tuesday night at the Sprint Center, a building familiar to WWE fans, and a arena that holds 20,000 nearly, only had 4,500 people in attendance for this Kanye West concert. That is like, walk off the stage. I'll see you later, Kansas City, low.
You ain't got the answers, Kansas City. You ain't got the answers.
I think more people showed up to that Sarah Silverman special on HBO than that Kansas City.
Yeah, that's not good. And, you know, based on the outside, as someone who looked into tickets for the Kanye tour, it's a lot of money to see Kanye. Kanye's not cheap. You know, you have to spend big bucks to see Kanye, and when you're talking about the Midwest, and you're not talking about a major city, you know, it's not talking about Chicago or anything like that, but I don't see fans opening up their wallets, especially during the holidays, to shell out money to see Kanye West. Not after he's sort of been doing Kanye West things in the media and just being an asshole. Let's just be real here.
You know, especially with this record, this particular project, the Yeezus album, which is, you know, not the most easily accessible to the mainstream. A good friend of mine, Nick Chappell, that works at a radio station down here, hopefully we can get him on the show one of these days to talk about his beloved Washington Redskins. But he recently went to the Kanye West show down here in Hampton Roads, and he said it was a great show. It was Kanye and I believe Kendrick Lamar was the opening act. And he was like, you know, he had heard the Yeezus album, but the performance actually made him like the songs on Yeezus a lot more than just hearing the music, you know, separately. And I think that's, you know, it's, I like the Yeezus record, but it's not for everybody. It's, you know, it's something that's a little bit harder to get into than some of Kanye's earlier works. And when you couple that with kind of the quote unquote crazy antics that we've seen from him over the past couple of months, you know, I could easily see why a city in the Midwest would be like, yeah, it's a recession still. We ain't spending money to see you, Mr. Crazy Black Genius Man.
Right, and if you want some spin, I can give this whole fiasco some spin in that Yeezus was a passion project from Kanye West. It wasn't promoted very heavily. It was just something Kanye West veered off and did by himself. And really, toward the end, he finally broke down and worked with Rick Rubin, which is a super producer, and decided to clean it up a little bit. But this was, by and large, a passion project, not a huge production. And you look at the songs, there's no big single on Yeezus. There's no All Falls Down. There's nothing like that. It's anti-white. It's anti-establishment. And he's going to Kansas, the Bible Belt, with this album where he calls Yeezus, which many see as blasphemous. I don't think he would draw very well in Kansas with this type of album. People want to go and they want to sing the lyrics to songs that they've heard over and over on the radio before. They want to hear Through the Wire. They want to hear all that stuff, but not necessarily Yeezus. So I don't think Kanye West should feel that he's in trouble, because even how the album sold, they're way down from what Kanye West usually does. I don't think he's in trouble. I don't think he's fallen off or anything like that. I think they're just circumstances of this album being more of a small-time album and him being in Kansas City.
Yeah, it's kind of like the most kind of head-nodding song on the record, at least in my opinion, is Blood on the Leaves, and that's not exactly, you know... that's not
exactly, you want to talk about anti-white, though.
Right, that's not exactly... I want to hear Blood on the Leaves, baby. That's my jam. Like, that's not exactly a mainstream song right there, you know. And, you know, it's kind of interesting, you know, the way Kanye kind of positions himself. And I don't think he cares one bit, because as we've heard from his interviews, He thinks that he's a genius, and he very well may be. He thinks that he's a visionary. He very well may be. And when you're in that category, you don't really sweat the small stuff. And I think, like you said, Alfred, this is a passion project. And the album received critical acclaim. And I think the tour, for the most part, has received critical acclaim. So I think in terms of selling out arenas or selling out stadiums, he doesn't really care about that, at least with this particular project.
In terms of albums of the year, that list, those lists are starting to come out now that we're approaching 2014. Spin has Yeezus as number one. Rolling Stone has Yeezus as number two in terms of albums of the year. So, I mean,
yeah, the AV Club had a Yeezus as number one as well.
I don't get it, but you know, I think that's, you know, these mainstream outlets that are putting the Yeezus album at the top of the list. Maybe that explains why I don't get the album, because I just don't think it was that great. But you know.
I mean, it's also kind of, you got like there's a hipster filter.
Yeah.
Kanye West.
Yeah, it's really showing its ugly head.
No, I loved the album. I really thought, you know, when I first heard it, to be honest, and I might get heat for this, I thought it was album of the year until Eminem's album came out. But I thought it was a great album. I thought it was good. Have you heard Eminem's album? We're not going to get into this, but Eminem is still I think he's better than Tupac. Yeah, I said it. Oh, I think Jesus. He's the greatest of all time. I don't think anybody can rhyme like Eminem. I don't think anybody shouts out hip-hop like Eminem does. And I thought he crushed every album that came out, with the exception of Yeezus, just based on talent, line for line, lyrics. I mean, if you think that Eminem is some poppy sensation, you're missing the point. You don't get it. Nobody knows hip-hop like Eminem. Nobody's a student of the game.
So,
an incredible album.
The guy who has a song on ABC College Football isn't a poppy sensation?
Is that it? What's wrong with that? So he gets mainstream love. Don't be mad at him. Don't hate the player. Hate the game.
You Jay-Z? Like football, Marshall?
Jay-Z had the mainstream songs that got out there on commercials and whatnot. So it's Kanye. So it's all the big rappers. What's wrong with that?
You talk about Jay-Z. I think that's kind of an interesting kind of counterpoint, because Kanye, you know, and Jay-Z's albums came out relatively close to one another, and it seemed like Jay-Z's album received more popular praise but less critical acclaim, whereas Kanye's album received less in terms of sales and things of that nature, but is now starting to get all these critical accolades. So I think it's very interesting to see the dichotomy between Kanye and Jay-Z.
That's what's going to help Kanye West, though, when it comes to award seasons. These critics love giving awards to the avant-garde, and they love looking smarter than everybody else. So the fact that this didn't sell too much, they'll be able to say, oh, well, you didn't get it. This is something that only the critics will love. And if you get too big, eventually that hurts you when it comes to award season. So I think this is going to be doing very well when it comes to awards and Grammys and critical acclaim.
I just want to see Kanye lose at the Grammys, so we can have a classic Kanye outburst again. We haven't had one of those in terms of an award show in a long time.
That's if he goes to the Grammys. I don't see him going to the Grammys.
If Kanye ain't winning the Grammys, he's losing, fam. Look at my new Adidas. I just signed a contract, fam. That's what I want to see at the Grammys.
I'm shocked that he didn't, because this is one of those moments where you would expect a Kanye breakdown. And so, but people said, the concert goers, the live attendees said that it was a very good concert, and he put on a hell of a show, as if that concert was sold out. And so, and that surprised me, because I expected this to be one of those moments where he just shows up, 4,500 of y'all showed up, y'all don't like my music, fuck Kansas. And then
I don't even know if this is Kansas or Missouri. I don't know which one it is. Oh, Yeezy. But yeah, that's Kanye for you. Never a dull moment. And again, like I said, he's, if nothing else, he's got his big booty wife and his new sneaker contract to console him in these rough, rough times.
And second best album of the year.
And a kid.
And a kid, yes. Who may or may not be Chris Humphries.
Uh-oh.
But anyway, let's move on to Kanye's running buddy, his big brother, Jay-Z, the Jigga Man. It was his birthday. Was it yesterday or the day before, Marcus?
December 4th,
my brother's birthday.
Yeah, December 4th, Jay-Z celebrated his birthday, and in accordance with that, put out a list of his ranking of all of his albums, and it's kind of raised some eyebrows. It's very interesting. Marcus, if you would, break down what Brother Carter had to say about his body of work.
All right, so here's the list. He only ranked his albums, not the collabs with R. Kelly and Kanye and all that stuff. So we'll start from 12 to 1. 12, Kingdom Come. His comment, First Game Back, Don't Shoot Me. Number 11, BP2. Too Many Songs, Fucking Guru and Hip Hop, Ha. which is pretty funny. Number 10, Volume 3, Pimp C Verse Alone, Oh So Ghetto. Number 9, Dynasty, Intro Alone. I co-sign on that. The intro on that CD is still great. Number 8 is BP3. Sorry, Critics, It's Good. Empire, in parentheses, gave Frank a run for his money. Number 7, Volume 1. Sunshine kills the album. Fuck Streets.
I like Sunshine, man.
Yeah, Where I'm From, You Must Love Me, etc. Number 6, Magna Carta. Fuck With, Tom Ford, Oceans, Beach, On the Run, Grail. Not what I can argue with. Number 5, American Gangster. 4.5 stars, cohesive. Number 4, Volume 2, classic. Number 3, The Black Album, classic. Number 2, The Blueprint, classic. Number 1, Reason Without, classic. So, most of that list I agree with. There's a couple albums that I would probably move up and move down, but you really can't argue the top 4.
Yeah, and maybe one. There's never going to be a definitive list. Even Jay-Z, even though Jay-Z himself has ranked these, this is just going to stir more debate. And I think Jay-Z has it almost dead on. There's a couple on Switch. I don't think Kingdom Come. I was pretty surprised that he ranked that as his last album. But in terms of this being a public list, I would see, because it was his first album back after the Black Album, and I did kind of think at points that, well, this isn't really the same guy, but I just thought it, the fact that he worked with Dre, and maybe I'm partial to the West Coast, that it was just a different sound, and I really liked it. But I really don't have too much of a problem with this. I think Holy Grail is ranked a little high, and I do think Dynasty is a little high, even at 9.
Yeah, I'm pretty much in agreement with this list. The only thing is, like I mentioned, I think he is downplaying Volume 1 a little bit because, I mean, it was a more pop-tinged album, a more R&B-tinged album, but that was the era, you know. Some of my favorite songs that Jay-Z's ever done are on that record. You know, Who You With is still one of my favorite Jay-Z songs to this day. The City Is Mine with Blackstreet is still, to me, that's a banger right there. And Sunshine, yeah, it was kind of corny. It was a babyface track, but, I mean, it for the time, that was a hot record. Like, anybody that was around back then can't front. You know what I mean? Like, in 96, 97, 98, Sunshine was a hot record. You know, and I know it might be like an old shame to him or something he wants to distance himself from, but I thought In My Lifetime was a hot record. And definitely, where did he rank it? Number 7?
Number 7. So, I mean, I
definitely would have had In My Lifetime in the top 5.
Yeah, I could see that. Pushing, well, American Gangster, Volume 1. Yeah, I could see top. I couldn't see it above Volume 2, Black Album.
No, Hard Knock Life was like the, I mean, he's had so many records that you could almost consider, you know, any number of them, like his zenith, I guess. But to me, Hard Knock Life was kind of when Jay-Z became, quote-unquote, Jay-Z.
Yeah, I mean, I think Magna Carta is 6 because it just came out. I would not have that 6.
Right,
I think that's screws up the list. I think if you push that down, you bump everything up 1. That means Volume 1 would be 6, and I would move Dynasty up a spot or 2.
Really?
Yeah, and I know, guilty pleasure.
It was amazing. Like we were just talking about mainstream, it was a great mainstream album, but listening to that, I don't think it holds up over time. It's like, wow, this is one of the all time great hip hop albums, and I'm not mad at him. You can't knock the hustle, but as far, when I'm looking at all these names, the Reasonable Doubt,
see what you did there.
You know, I just think that is a lie.
Listen, he had to give Beanie some love. This was like the Beanie Sigel album. Beanie was like on half the tracks.
Yeah. Oh, Beans. Whatever happened to you, Beans?
Exactly.
Didn't does Dynasty constitute as a compilation album? Or was that Jay-Z? Because if so, then he's missing the Kanye collabo. And then, of course, as we were talking on there, the R. Kelly collabos. I wonder where those would be ranked.
I mean, technically, it's Jay-Z's album. It didn't come out as a collab. But, I mean, there's so many. I think every song just about has.
It was like that Puffy record with P. Diddy and the family, but it was like really just the family.
Pretty much. He was trying to help out his boys, and it didn't work out too well because no one cared about Bleak after this album.
I love how he buried Bleak on that Diamonds remix, where he said Bleak could be a hit away his whole career. As long as I'm alive, he's still a millionaire. Even if I die, I got him in my will somewhere, so you can just sit back and chill somewhere. That's like, if that's not an indictment on your own guy, that's like Triple H
stuff. Yeah, I like to be buried like that. I mean, you ain't got to rap another verse, and you still taken care of?
Yeah.
Like, Bleak could, I could easily see, like, in 10, 15 years, Bleak shows up at, like, some award ceremonies, holding the umbrella for Jay-Z, like he's the hip-hop, the gangster version of Fonzworth Bentley. Got to make sure my man keeps his head dry. but yeah, I think it's a very interesting list, and it's also shrewd. You know, Jay-Z is nothing if not, you know, somebody that knows how to stir up controversy, quote-unquote, or stir up attention, and he knows that this is going to cause debate amongst hip-hop heads and amongst music fans in general, and as long as people are talking about you, it's good news. And, you know, like Marcus was saying, I think if he did this list maybe 2 or 3 years from now, you'd see Amanda Carter, Holy Grail a little bit lower, but, you know, he can't hate on the current product.
No, he can't, and props to him for putting this out, because as you mentioned before, or off-air, you know, Kanye wouldn't do such a thing. He wouldn't rank his own.
All my records is number one, fam. Ain't nobody number two. It's 1, 1A, 1C, 1B, 1AA. They all great. It's genius. You just ain't accepted it yet. Yeah. No, knowing Kanye, he'd probably troll everybody and have, like, 808s and Heartbreaks the number one record.
Yeah.
Well... I mean,
are you gonna defend it?
I will defend that album more than Yeezus.
Really?
Yeah.
I remember thinking his career was over after, like, what is he doing? Like, is he serious with this? But I mean, I could see the appeal. There are a couple of songs that I didn't like on that album, but I just thought a whole entire album just following this fad of autotune, I thought he was above that.
I mean, it was a good record. I think it got a lot of hate just because it was so different from Graduation. And Graduation was just, to me, that's still...
my favorite.
That's still, to me, the best complete album that Kanye's ever put out. But, you know, 808s isn't as bad as everybody thinks it is, you know, because I think it just came after one of the greatest records that this dude has ever made.
Yeah.
So That's the music segment. And again, it's great that Kanye leads to topics each and every week. Like, I think, remember when we first started the show, we had a Tiger Woods story, like, almost every week. And now, for a while, it was a crack story. And now Kanye West has started to take that mantle. I like that. It's good to see that young brother doing good. But to close out segment four and to close out the show this week, we got a story of a brother that's doing bad. And Marcus, can you tell us a little bit about the Larry Sanders Show?
Yeah, so Larry Sanders was involved in a fight on November 3rd that has sidelined him ever since. He injured his thumb in this fight in Milwaukee. And there's now a video that was released this week of the fight itself. And we saw just how bad this fight was and why he ended up getting hurt. But the reason why he's making news on this show is because he is claiming his blackness was a major factor in this bottle throwing fight that happened in a nightclub. Let's see. He says, I blame no one for my mistakes. I take full responsibility for my actions. But this is something I've dealt with my whole life, from being the black male being followed around the store to being the black male helped around the store. I've seen the American society from both ends. People are hypnotized by the media to feel and base certain judgment towards a group of people, and they don't even know it. Born into a system put in place before our existence. He needs to use this album, I tell you. He's probably listening to that album when he wrote this shit.
I'm just a new slave.
Good thing I didn't get jumped by a bunch of black guys that night, or it would have been gang-related. LOL. Sheesh.
First of all, you undercut your powerful statement by ending it with LOL. Sheesh.
Yeah.
But second of all...
Exclamation point.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Three exclamation points.
And, like, eight E's and a shish.
Yeah. But second of all, it's like, you can make a good point but still be an idiot. And I think Larry fits into this category. I mean, what he's saying, if you just take it out of the context of what happened, there's some validity to it. You know, it's accurate. But all of that stuff going on, being followed in a store, or, you know, the way society is set up, You know, that doesn't excuse you from throwing a bottle in the nightclub at people. Playing for the 6'11", playing for Alfred's Milwaukee Bucks. So defend your boy, Alfred. Defend your boy.
See, I wouldn't have said anything about him being a Milwaukee Bucks. You wouldn't have outed him. But, you know, I don't know. I want to defend Larry Sanders. It's just the thing is, like, you've got to rise above those types of incidents. I understand. When I'm listening to Marcus Reed's crowd, I'm just like, you know, this guy makes sense. His brother makes sense. But there's an asterisk as the fact that he engaged in what was going on. You have to rise above being followed in the story. You have to rise above being judged because of your blackness. Because, yeah, if you continue to engage and if you continue to amplify these stereotypes, they're going to continue to exist.
Rise above slashing somebody's face open with a bottle.
Please, Larry.
Can we start there?
Please.
By the way, the reason why I don't feel sorry for Larry Sanders, if you go to his Instagram page, the name that he's going by at the moment, Nappy Gilmore. So go fuck yourself, Larry.
Yeah, Larry, first of all.
And let's not mention the dog story. Did we mention that on the show from a few weeks ago? The same week this fight happened, he got cited for leaving his dogs out in the cold Milwaukee winter. Let me find the story.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Marcus, let's not forget that. You know what I mean? I'm surprised that story hadn't gotten more traction because, you know, as we saw with the Michael Vick incident, like, America loves its dogs.
More than humans.
Yes, more than humans in a lot of cases.
Seriously.
Here it is. According to court records, a neighbor called police to say Sanders kept his two German Shepherd puppies outside in the cold for hours without proper shelter, food, and water. The person said she tried to speak with Sanders about his dogs, but felt intimidated. Oh, that's code. And was told by Sanders to leave the property. Leave his property. The neighbor said Sanders told her he was going to call the police if she returned. Eventually, officers did come out. It was officially noted the temperature outside was 17 degrees, and the puppies had no shelter, food, or water outside.
I think that quote would have been more apt for this moment just because the woman felt intimidated about talking to Larry Sanders, a millionaire, about his dogs.
Yeah, I could imagine Larry's like, you know, I blame no one but myself. I take full responsibility. But, I mean, this is something I dealt with my whole life with dogs. You know, sometimes they want to be outside. Sometimes they want to be inside. And I don't really know. It's American society. So, you know, LOL, sheesh. Yeah, this is just, I have no problem coming to the defense of black athletes when they are wrongfully, accused or wrongfully treated, especially if they, you know, have a case and, you know, they make a sensible argument. But when you try to use something like, you know, quote unquote, playing the race card or, you know, speaking out as a black man and, you know, talking about the ills of society, you can't be in the wrong. Like, you know what I mean? You have to make sure that you're on point. And, you know, it wasn't like he just got sucked into this nightclub brawl. He was an active participant. Like we mentioned, you know, he's got the bottle. He's slashing people with bottles on the face and throwing bottles at people. You are actively participating in this destruction and in this mania. So, you know, you can't then step back and say, oh, the only reason this happened is because I was black.
Right, and I always hated the term race card because it kind of prohibits people from using racism as an excuse, and it kind of quelches and creates an illusion that racism doesn't exist because, oh, it's just an imaginary card. But you can only play that race card if you are qualified and pre-approved to be an owner of that race card. If you've got bad credit like Larry Sanders, you're doing all this stuff, you cannot play that race card.
Yeah. Speaking of which, on a side note, if anybody is a fan of The Daily Show, there's a great segment with Larry Wilmore and Jon Stewart where it's about the race card. He's doing this magic trick. If you search that on YouTube, it's awesome. But like you mentioned, you know, it's Larry Sanders doesn't have a lot of credit, a lot of goodwill built up. And so it just, when stuff like this happens, even if he was completely in the right, there would have been people that would have been like, you know, you asked for this stuff. But when you're an active participant, Marcus, and you acting the fool out there, you know, you can't then come back and say, oh, it's because I was black. I was being profiled against in that nightclub when I had that bottle slashing that man in the face.
Yeah, not a good look. And before he got hurt, he was playing pretty poorly. He was in the doghouse in Milwaukee. No pun intended.
I was going to say, I see what you did
no,
there.
No, I wasn't even trying to do
well
that.
Well played, Mr. Vandenberg. Those German Shepherds, wish they had a doghouse to be in.
Well, they did. They did. they did take the German Shepherds away. So
you can that's probably why he was mad. They took the dogs away. He got drunk, went crazy.
Oh no! This was way before the incident at the bar.
Oh.
but you know, as you mentioned, you be careful with the race car. You can only play it. It's like Survivor. If you get the immunity idol, you keep the idol. You play it when you need it. You can't just toss it out there. It's tough enough that people assume that black people are overly sensitive to racism and we're always looking to, you know, point the finger at others. But there are times when incidents do happen and it's okay to play the card, but this is not one of them, especially when you see the video come out and you see yourself in the video. So how do you explain your actions? You just can't.
It was a black and white video, to be fair. I mean, like you said, you know, you got to know when to quote unquote play the card. It's like Uno. You can't just be playing a draw four on every hand. You got to sit back and bide your time.
Or spades. You can't just toss out the bits.
If you're playing a draw four on every hand, you're cheating.
So, yeah. So basically what we're saying is Larry Sanders reneged in the game of racial spades.
He did.
No pun intended with the renege.
He didn't cover his books.
No. And on a final side note to Larry Sanders, if you're going to get involved in some activities at the bar, be like Alfred Cunawa. Don't start fights at the bar. Hop behind the bar and get everybody drinks.
There you go.
That's how you bring people together instead of tearing people apart, throwing bottles. Steal liquor and bring everybody together. That is the true spirit of what Nelson Mandela would have wanted for us.
Make sure that the surveillance camera is off and proceed.
What was the name of that bar again, Alfred?
I'm not going to give the name.
I remember because I was on the show the other day.
It rhymes with
Slabowakis.
Yeah, see, I had a camp for words.
That was.
Say, Alfred's going to have to wear a mask next time he goes into that bar.
So I'm going to be in Vegas for 6 days during Christmas, so I might have to swing by said establishment and turn you in.
Get a reward.
I thought you were going to try it out after hours if you want to try it out. Like a charm.
No, Marcus wouldn't do something like that.
No, I wouldn't snitch on you. Or steal liquor, no. not in the city that gives away liquor practically. You'd play penny slots and they're trying to get you drunk, so.
Yeah.
No need to steal.
That is something I never thought of when we had that initial conversation. Like I said, I was doing some archiving stuff with the shows, and I was listening to that particular episode. And I'm like, out of all the places you could have gone to steal liquor, like Vegas, don't they be giving out free alcohol all the time?
Exactly.
Yeah, but you go to Vegas, and at least me, I get this rebel streak in me because you're in Sin City, and they promoted it as such a place of debauchery, and I just had to do something illegal, allegedly.
Yeah. So, yeah, Larry Sanders, take a note out of the Big Nasty playbook and you know, stop hopping on people and just hop behind the bar. Oh, man. So I think that's going to bring it into another great episode of the Kings of Sport podcast. Good show. We'll be back next week with a new episode. But before we go, Brother Marcus, where can the listeners follow you and see your work and learn when is an appropriate time to play the race card?
You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Marco Will, MarcoWill.
Big Nasty.
At This Is Nasty on Twitter, go to Bleach Report, read the articles, watch the videos, and watch the Kings of Sports shout out on my latest episode of WWTF. I'm going to try to work that in every episode, actually.
Yes, his award-winning episode of WTF.
That's
pretty good. That's pretty good. You can follow me on Twitter, and the number 8, MOZAIK, Nate Mosaic on Twitter. Follow all of us at KOS_POD, CosPod on Twitter. Check us out on iTunes. Check us out on Stitcher. Check us out on podcastland.com. Go there, vote for the Kings of Sport for the December podcast of the month, if you will. And share the podcast with your friends. You know, we've had a lot of new listeners over the past couple of weeks, and we definitely appreciate you guys coming in and checking out the show. But if you like it, tell your friends. And if you don't like it, send us a note telling us why. We may pay attention to your criticism.
Or don't send your note.
Address it to This Is Nasty on Twitter.
Troll me and I'll troll you back.
Yes. If you have a problem with our race car discussion, send all of your comments and criticism to This Is Nasty. I also want to shout out real quick Place to Be Nation. We are a member of the Place to Be Nation family, your one-stop spot for the best in pop culture, sports, and entertainment. And I believe in a couple weeks they're going to be doing a year-end Best Of show, and I'll be a part of that with the guys from the Place to Be podcast. So look out for that. Big shout out to Audible, audibletrial.com/thekingsofsport. Big shout out, again, we mentioned it last week, but now it is confirmed and true. Big shout out to our brother John Pollock from the Fight Network on his nuptials. And many happy years for you and your bride. And happy Hanukkah to all our Jewish brothers and sisters out there. I know Hanukkah's almost over, I think, but happy Hanukkah anyway, because we didn't do it last week. So, yeah, I think that's going to be it.
I think that's all the shout-outs.
Yeah, I think that's all the shout-outs for this week. Shout-out, rest in peace, Paul Walker and Nelson Mandela. And, I think that's all the shout-outs.
Unless you got anything else. The guy who created the Dorito Locos Taco, he died too.
Really?
Yeah. Really? 41.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
41?
Don't you work for that establishment? Shouldn't you be mourning this guy's death?
I don't get the memo. I don't. I mean, we didn't get little black taco stickers to put on our shirts this week.
You guys should.
But no, I didn't hear.
Todd Mills of Little Rock, Arkansas, died November 28th, Thanksgiving morning, after a long fight with brain and lung cancer. He was the guy who hatched the seed of an idea of the wildly popular Doritos Locos Taco in 2009. And basically said he was watching Doritos commercial, and he basically told his wife, quote, "How awesome would it be if this taco show was a Dorito?" And then next thing you know, boom.
And it is pretty awesome.
It's made over $1 billion. He didn't get paid a single dime on this. How did that happen?
Yeah, that's that's not
corporations.
Good.
Corporations. There's a reason they got the fast food strikes this week in all around the country. There's a reason. Corporations. Yeah. But yeah,
those Doritos they're so good.
That was I was gonna say, like, I like the original ones and I like the fiery ones. The Cool Ranch, not so much. But yeah, that's a brilliant, brilliant idea, especially from a establishment that is known to cater to late night drunks and stoners. Like, that's just a brilliant combination of Doritos and tacos. So rest in peace, Doritos Locos, man.
Todd Mills. I hope Taco Bell helps out with
something. Yeah, they should pay for the funeral.
They should.
Set up a scholarship fund. I don't know if he had kids.
Yeah.
They did kick in. I guess he was raising money for his medical bills, and Taco Bell donated $1,000 to help him reach their goal. So,
but still, man, come on.
Give a little more to Taco Bell.
Yeah. I mean, you got it, Taco Bell. You got it, man. Come on. Come on, buddy. And that was Alfred that said that, in case anybody at Taco Bell International was listening.
Someone just volunteered their salary for a year. That's what I heard. Someone said, I will donate my salary to Todd Mills.
Hey, I don't think I heard that.
In the words of the ancient proverb, you can't get blood from a turnip. I mean, I could put something on. I could put something on it. I could put something on it. That's about it. So, yeah, man, it's been a crazy week, and again, the first thing was real serious, but it's good to enjoy sports and the pop culture for what it is for the most part, and that's entertainment and ridiculousness, and So we'll see. Next week will be a new week, and who knows what. What'll pop up next week and what coaches Alfred will get fired. So
I'll do my best to not get you fired, but I just got to keep it real.
Jason Kidd, you on the clock, brother. CMB, we all we got. So for Marcus Vandenberg, for Big Nasty Alfred Cunawa, I am the Godfather Nate Milton, and you've been down with the Kings.
Well, that's all for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. Be sure to come back next week for an all-new episode. You can leave feedback for the show on Twitter at KOS_POD or via Gmail at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. Don't forget to like and rate us on iTunes and tell a friend. The Kings of Sport is a production of the Most Snake Podcast Network.
Whether you like it or not, he's back. D-A-double-D-Y, that's X. Sharp as a tack, like I just left.